Christmas was past, and we were feeling the remoteness of our rented home from the shops. It was about 15 miles away. The only way to get anywhere was by taxi. Delivery men came to the door, bringing milk, meat and bread, but there was no real choice. I've decided to buy a car. As Canadian drivers, we will get a better one. One thing that impressed the gov was the utter lack of courtesy on the roads. As he often said, the Americans were probably the world's worst drivers, with the Canadians a very close second. 60 countries, he should know something about it. Taxi drew up at the door and the driver hooted. Av went out. Miss Koo called after him, "Get a good car, Gov, don't let them swindle you." I heard the taxi door slam and the sound of a car driving off. Of car driving, I simply can't wait to get out in it. It was perfectly true. Miss Koo would ride anywhere at any time and she loved speed. Car riding, unless I can go at not more than 20 miles an hour speed when one is blind, prefers to race along the highway going at least the maximum allowed by the law. The morning passed slowly, we cats fretting at being without the governor. I listened, and then I heard it. It was a taxi returning to the door. On the window ledge and uttered an exclamation of disgust. "They have come back by taxi, they haven't bought a car." Up opened the door. "Well, how did you get on?" she asked. Miss Koo yelled, "Queek, queek, all the beans, give, what happened?" "Well," said the gov, "we saw a car which appeared to be very suitable. It is an old Monarch out here, so that we can try it for the day." Her tail fluffed with joy. "I'll go up and keep watch through the bathroom window," she shouted. It had happened. We were just going to have a cup of tea when Miss Koo shouted, "It is coming, two cars." Yippee. Dance of joy in the room above. Got in a fever of impatience, rushing around like a cat who had just had her kittens taken from her. "Golly," she breathed, "what can they be doing?" Up could not bear the suspense either. Putting on her thickest coat, she dashed out. "Ding yowl, I can see it, fief, as green and as big as a bus." In time to save Miss Koo from bursting with frustration, her up and said, "So you want to see the car, eh? Do you want to come? Fief, air where it is safe." And Buttercup, well wrapped up, went out into the cold air. Ma rubbed my head and said, "You will be able to go for rides now, fief." Half an hour later they came back. Miss Koo was bubbling with excitement. "Wonderful, wonderful," she yelled at me. "I went to Tecumseh with it. If you go on like that, why not sit here and tell me all about it? I can't follow you when you stutter and stammer with excitement." I was going to be angry. Then she came across and sat by the space heater, folding her hands primly. She said, "Well, it was like this, fief. The old man carried me out and put me on the back seat, and there was plenty of room for him. You know what a lot of room he takes." Sat in the front passenger seat and the gov started the engine. "The car is green and is an automatic, whatever that means, and there is room for all of us and two others. He is too law-abiding, I told him so, and he said wait until we have paid for the thing. They're going to drive over and pay the money this afternoon and then we can go fast to Tecumseh." And then we came back, so here we are. I paused a moment while she combed the end of her tail, and said, "You should see it, fief, at your behind seats." "Be thrilled by the car." "Be able to get out a little," said Miss Koo. "The car is warm, gee." Over, then the gov and Ma got ready to go out. "We shan't be long," said Ma. "We are just going to pay for the car and get some groceries. We'll give you a ride when we come back," said. "I am not fond of cars." "You are a silly old woman cat," said Miss Koo. She sat up and went thoroughly into her toilet, ears, back of her neck, whole body, and right onto the tip of her tail. "I have to make a good impression on the new car," she explained, "or it may not run well if it dislikes me." Ma came back. I was delighted to hear the rustle of brown paper and thus to know that a fresh supply of food had been laid in. My phobias, since my starvation days, was a fear of being without food. It was a foolish fear, but phobias are not easy to dispel. Even greater phobia, although my common sense told me that I had no need to worry, was that someone would try to lift me by the fur at the back of my neck. This is such an evil practice that I am going to write a few lines about it. All of our problems, then people will not know of them. I was about to have my third set of babies. Pierre, the French gardener who was employed by me, was very great indeed, and my babies just fell out of me and were killed on the stone pathway. The sudden shock harmed me internally and was summoned and he had to pack part of me with something to staunch the blood. Cost me 5 kittens. Anger deducted from your wages. Whined Pierre. I was most careful. I lifted her by the scruff of her neck. She must be a sickly creature. There is always something wrong with her. With anger, this cat is being ruined. He shouted. Adult cats should never be lifted by their fur. Only fools would treat expensive animals so. Furious at the loss of money which the death of my children had caused, at the same time she was a little puzzled. But monsieur, she said, mother cats carry their kittens by the fur of their necks. What is wrong with that? Veterinarian, but the mother cat carries her children thus when they are only days old. That all is caused. Adult cats should always be lifted so that the weight is taken by the chest and the back legs. Otherwise a cat may be harmed internally. And except my family. Let any stranger pick me up. Anyway, so what am I worrying about, than anyone else? And this is how he does it, the correct way. He puts his left hand under my chest, between my forelegs where they join the body. His right hand supports either the front of my thighs, or he allows me to stand with my back legs on his right hand. And holding a nervous or strange cat, one should always have the right hand supporting the front of the thighs. Then the cat cannot kick or leap away, and it is the most painless way of holding cats. Always pick them up by the back of the neck, as some cat books say. No matter what some cat's books say, we, the cats, know what we prefer, and now you know too. So please, if you love us cats, if you want to spare us pain or injury, lift us as described above. Do you like to be lifted by the back of your neck, or by your hair? Do we like to have silly puss-puss talk? Understand any language if the person will think what he or she is saying. To be talk irritates us and makes us wholly uncooperative. We have brains and know how to use them. One of the many things that amazes us about humans is that they are social. We are merely dumb animals. So sure that there is no other form of sentient life than humans, so sure that there cannot be life on other worlds, for humans believe most strongly that they are the highest form of evolution. Let me tell you something, we do not speak English, nor French, nor Chinese, not so far as the sounds go, but we understand those languages, verse by thought. We understand by thought, and before they were treacherous to the animal world and so lost the power of thought reading. We not use reason. As such, we have no frontal lobes. We know by intuition. Come to us without us having to work out the problems. Humans use a telephone in order to speak over a distance. A number. Know the number of the cat to whom we desire to speak. Can send our messages over hundreds of miles by telepathy. Very rarely can humans understand our telepathic messages. I can sometimes. The gov can always find me. This is a long way from writing about our first car in Canada. Still say, with all respect to Ms. Gu, that it is good to get a cat's opinion on the best way to lift and treat a cat. In the morning the mailman brought letters, heaps of letters. Looked at the envelopes and I heard the sound of paper being slit. Bustling as the gov drew a letter from its envelope, then silence for a moment while he read. Canadians are savage. Ministry of Health. Telling me that if I do not report forthwith I am liable to be deported. Read it herself. First time they have written to you. Wonder why they write in such a nasty way? All I know is that I bitterly regret coming to this awful country. Other letters, items saying that our goods, the things sent by sea, have arrived and someone has to go to customs about it. Inuit, bustling off to get ready. Lunch. Ma returned. These Canadian officials are so unpleasant, she said as she came in. Typewriters said that if we wanted an electric typewriter it should have been bought in Canada. It was bought before we even thought on coming to this country. All settled now, but they were very unpleasant. Lunch. Who wants a ride? Stay home and keep Fifi company, said Ma. The Gov, Miss Gu, and Buttercup went out and I heard the garage door being opened and the car started. They go. Thief, said Ma, running her hand up and down my spine. They are going to look round Windsor. Ma make the beds. I would run up and down on the sheets and it would straighten them out fine. The name of the landlord. But outside, I never could understand why everyone travelled around so. An hour or so later the gov drove back. But her feet should not get cold on the snow. Not likes beautiful Dublin. Thief, said Miss Gu. Windsor is a very small city. and all the men seemed to smoke strong cigars and say, "Well, I guess street," and I thought there were big skyscrapers in the street. The river and the big buildings were in Detroit. "Has brought our cases from the customs," said Ma. "Cases were carried in clothing, cases of books, a tape recorder, and the big electric typewriter." Throughout the rest of the afternoon we were busy unpacking, did our share by examining everything and by raking out clothes and paper. I've opened the great packing case containing the typewriter, changed to the Canadian Voltage. "Now we can start another book without delay." The machine off the floor and set it on a table, inserting a sheet of paper, and plugging the cable into a power socket. He sat down to type. In spluttered and jerked sir and crosser, the electric meter board and read 115 volts 60 cycles, rab motor on this machine. "It can't be used. Let's ring up the makers," said Ma. "They have a place in Windsor." "Nor would they make any allowance on a trade-in, nor would they sell the machine." "Traded in the machine for an ordinary portable of a different maker, and through a different firm up uses that machine, the Olympia portable on which he wrote The Third Eye, Doctor from Lhasa, The Ramper Story, and is now typing my book for me. Into Windsor to buy some peat moss for Miss Goo and me." Darkly, "There is something in the wind, thief. You mark my words." Piz out of herself. She nodded her head sagely and wandered off, muttering beneath her breath, "Sheila has seen a monkey." "Surely she has seen plenty of them before, thief," whispered Miss Goo, rushing back to me. "That is why she smells so strange. She has been near a monkey. Never knows what that young woman is going to do next." "Have a monkey in the house?" Ma asked the gov. "Will you do now?"
"No, seriously," said Ma. "Sheila wants a monkey."
"Now?" asked Miss Goo. "Thief," she whispered. "The old man's taken a blow over this. A monkey. What next will she want?" On a chair, I went over to him and rubbed my head against his leg to show that I sympathized with him. Fulled my fur and turned to Buttercup. "It all about, anyhow?" he asked her.
"Well," she said, "we went in to get the peat moss and there was this monkey sitting mournfully on the bottom of a cage.
Sweet. I asked the man to let me see him and it seems that he has cage paralysis from being confined too long.
Recover if we have him," she added quickly.
"Pew," said the gov. "If you want a monkey, go and get it."
"Messy things, though.
Come and look at him," said Buttercup, excitedly, so deeply that I heard his buttons creak. The gov stood up and the evening rush of traffic, of excitement, rushed up the stairs, and rushed down again. To herself as they went out, "You should see the gov's face.
See the gov's face.
I know he is bald, bearded, and big. Miss Goo describes people for me, and does it well. But there is nothing that can take the place of actually seeing. We blind people do develop a sense though. We form a sort of mental image of what a person looks like for them, and tell much from their hand touch and from their voice." We wandered round, half our minds on the house, and the tea which was being prepared, and the other half on the gov and Buttercup, wondering whatever they would bring back in a monkey cage.
"Miss Goo," I said by way of making conversation.
"Huh?"
"Well, they should have kept you there, I guess."
"It's monkeys," she went on in an aggrieved tone. We sat and waited. Ma had the tea ready and then she sat by us and probably thought of monkeys too. "I'll give you the wire as soon as I see anything," she added as she turned and ran lightly up the stairs. A boy came to the door bringing the evening paper. Ma went and fetched it from the rack and came in to scan the headlines. Not a sound from Miss Goo, ensconced in the bathroom window. Chapter 8. The door opened and entered. From the manner in which they were walking I knew they were carrying something heavy or bulky.
"What a pong!" she exclaimed.
I wrinkled my nose. There was an acrid smell around, a smell like wet rabbit, bad drains, and old tomcat. He put something on the ground, and at the strangeness of my impressions I felt a thrill run along my spine and my tail began to fluff.
"Thief,"
exhorted Miss Goo. "Have a rum-looking fellow here. He is in a great big parrot cage. Oh golly,
eek.
Do you think we can get that chain off him?"
"Buttercup,
I'm sure he would be all right without it. Let us take him out of the cage first." A noise as of a small door being opened. Suddenly, appallingly, pandemonium broke out. It was a cross between ship's sirens which I had heard at New York Harbor and the foghorn at the Bailey Lighthouse, Dublin. Backed off in consternation.
"Gee,"
she exclaimed.
I wish I could make a commotion like that and get away with it. The leak, not turning my back on the creature, then leaned over to Miss Gu and asked, "Is the thing being killed?" "Killed? Good, that racket before it was even touched." "For whacking Great Chain so the thing will be more comfortable. Put some newspapers on the floor," said the Gov. "Let us have some news from the press." I heard the rustle of papers and then the creature began to scream, whistle and hoot again. "How do we address the thing?"
"I'm going to call it Monkey Rouse," replied Miss Gu.
"My oh my," she added, "Buttercup has really gone off her rocker now. If we hang the cage up here, between the two rooms, he will be able to see more. What do you think?"
"I want him to be out of the cage. Seems to me he needs attention," said the Gov. "Let us get a vet here to look at him."
B.I.T. did to the shelter of the underside of the Gov's bed, Mark came back from the telephone. "The vet will be here tomorrow," she said. "He did not want to come, but as I told him, we could hardly bring a monkey to him."
"At about 11 in the morning.
Miss Gu," I said, "what does this monkey look like?"
"Like on earth.
Critter indeed. Last time I saw anything so awful was when Buttercup had a baby last in England. You know, monkey has a face like that little Tom, wrinkled, wizened, helpless, meaningless sounds and is always leaking."
Sku paused reminiscently.
"Ah, those were strange days," she said. "Buttercup used to have a husband, then one day she said yow, she's got herself a monkey, TSK. Hate, hate," said Monkey Rouse. "Hate, hate, hate all, shop life bad, didn't want to go, Eddie sell me short."
"Shin, do you think we should have a word with Monkey Rouse?"
"That hate here, this is a good household, or, the guy is nuts." "Psst into Canadian or American, nuts, cats is nuts. I good American, hate all others, crazy cats keep away." The Gov came over and picked me up in his arms.
"We'll hold you close to the cage and you tell the monkey he is being foolish, cannot reach out and touch you, thief."
"Psst, Monkey Rouse, get out of here, get out of here." I felt intense sorrow that any creature would be so foolish, so misguided and so spiritually blind.
Kirouz said, "Listen to me, we want to make you happy, we want you to come out of that cage and play with us, we will look after you."
I've rubbed my chin and chest.
"Will come to his senses if we let him go a bit,
and we'll tell you if we get through to him."
"Shop too long,
Otik. Still, time will tell. If she put him on the floor, out of his cage, he may feel better."
Age was suspended in the archway between two rooms.
I've tried to lift Monkey Rouse out while Buttercup held the cage steady.
Rent, no, shredded, by the screams of Monkey Rouse who clung to the cage and shrieked and shrieked and shrieked.
"Core, this sure is a neurotic monkey.
Hate, hate," screamed Monkey Rouse.
At last he was out and sitting upon the floor. I heard a trickling noise and started to move forward to investigate.
"Mind, forward you will have to jump the yellow sea,
caught by the advancing waves."
"Yes, how about trapping up the cats and taking them down to the edge of the water?"
"Poor old Gu is killing herself to look out."
"Shell jackets for cold weather, they are knitted of thick wool and have armholes and they keep us really warm."
Each of us wrapped in an even warmer rug, we were ready to be carried out.
We were more adventurous.
Mark carried me the other side of the sun porch and stepped down to the snow-covered grass.
By the time which we were walking I estimated that the back garden was about three houses long and there was a broad stone wall beyond which was the frozen lake.
"Be careful," said the Gov to Ma and me, "it is very slippery here."
"Isn't the lake big?"
"Thing to me, it is like a sea, as big as the sea at Howth.
It is frozen.
Now let me see, what can I tell you about it? Before me is the lake. There is an island and on the tip of it there is a tower where men watch so that no one can steal the ice. They should buy refrigerators, you see, and make business," she added.
"Since I can see America and to the right the lake swells out becoming bigger and bigger."
"Thing, thief?" asked the Gov, not feeling cold.
"A brave big girl cat?"
"Me?
Of course I am," replied Miss Gu.
"All right, hold on tightly," said the Gov. "You and I will go down onto the ice.
Then you can tell Fief all about it."
"With delight." I heard the sound of climbing footsteps on frozen wood and Miss Gu called from the distance, "Hey, Fief, I'm being kept on ice."
"Thick to America, Fief."
And where Buttercup was nursing Monkey Rouse, which showed quite a lot of faith, we entered. She stood up quickly and put the monkey on the floor.
"Bother,"
she said, all over my clean dress, TSK, never to have a monkey, thief. The storm raged all night. Worst for years. Ones who brought the bread and the milk, we knew, too, for we also listened to the radio reports. Water pipes in the basement were frozen solid. A pity monkey rouses water pipes don't freeze, said Miss gloomily. The vet of monkeys had been, and to our great delight, had gone. Eggs might help, but I doubt it, been left too long. With a quick shake of his head he had gone from under the gov's bed. The roofing of the next house was banging. Somewhere Akin was rolling along the snow-covered road under the influence of the wind. Sitting in the middle of the floor, we were sitting on a sofa, oofing a mighty breath. Bam! Said our double window as it blew into the room, bringing the storm with it. Distant bedroom with him. Await developments. The gov grabbed tools, nails and materials and hurried out into the storm, anxious to do something before the roof blew off or the walls blew in. Pink caterpillars. People will be blown across the ice to America if they don't hurry up. The house was shaking to the fury of the gale. The gov and Buttercup wrestled with sheets of plastic and lumps of wood and nearly got blown away when the wind got under the plastic sheet. Wrestled mightily to hold the curtains together so that the snow would not fill the room. Upstairs Monkey Rouse was shrieking like a mad thing and patched up the broken window. Temporary repair, but if he does not get it done properly the whole roof will go full, said Miss Gu. It is his heart, you know. The winter seemed endless. Somewhere near the North Pole. Same. Dull weather, falling snow and freezing temperatures. Ring, attending to the shopping and telling the gov where to drive. The following drivers, admonishing them not to tailgate and reprimanding them for their bad driving habits. One day the gov and Buttercup asked her to go to Detroit with them, to do the housework. Turned Miss Koo walked in with a jaunty air. Her tail straight up. Sit beside me, thief, she said, graciously, and I will tell you about Detroit. You need to have your mind broadened, anyhow, flattered that she should take so much trouble to tell me. I moved over to where she was impatiently tapping the ground with her tail, and sat down. Idly combed her vibrissle as she talked. "'Tis like this," she commenced. "We left this dump and drove along to where old Hiram makes his whiskey, for the railroad tracks and then right into Wyandotte until I thought we had gone far enough to arrive back in Ireland. Then the gov turned right and left again. Some guy in a uniform waved us on and we managed to get beneath the ground. Not at all frightened, mind you. But we careered along a dimly lit tunnel that we were going under the Detroit River. Believe it, that is what it felt like. That is why I had chills up and down my spine. When wet and then we paid some money. A man stuck his ugly head in the window and said we're born folks. Peace. And the man said okay and we drove off. Been very wonderful, Miss G, I said. I would dearly love to be able to see such wonders. Said Miss G, you ain't seen nothing yet. Move out into a big street with buildings so high that I expected to see angels sitting on their tops. On the tops of the buildings, of course, the angels would be sitting on their bottoms. As had gone mad, but of course they were Americans. And two white ships moored with their winter overcoats on so as to keep the snow out. The gov said that the canvas coverings would be taken off and the ships would take a lot of Americans somewhere and back. For that they would pay money. Such things, because I had been on a ship at Marseille, far away on the shores of the warm Mediterranean, that now I was sitting looking after a mad monkey in frozen Canada. But I did not say a word, Miss Gu, I replied. No, but you were thinking of other things. I want your undivided attention if I am to continue. Yes, Miss Gu. I am all attention, I replied. She sighed and continued, we looked in some working great shops. Buttercup had a yen for shoes. While she was looking down at shoes I lay upon my back so that I could look up at a bigger than big building. Particular building was called Pin Up Scott or something, but I did not find out why he was going to be pinned up. Enough of shoes, so they could give a little attention to poor old Goo once again. We drove along a terrible road, so rough that I thought my teeth would drop out, and the gov said we were in Porter. Thought it was the porter one drinks, not me, of course, and then I thought it was a man who carried things, pped off. The gov handed some money to another guy in uniform and we went past a row of little huts where they controlled traffic. As I looked up I saw a structure like a giant Meccano thing and on it was labeled Ambassador Bridge. The view to Detroit we had gone under the river, with the ship's bottoms above us, Ken would say we were intoxicated. It spread scene the gov make, train ferries were carrying railroad cars across the water. Sing along, and the Great Lake ships looked like toys in a bathtub. Wind struck the bridge and it shook a little. Let's get out of here, gov said. All right, so we drove onto the end of the bridge. Waff, you got folks in uniform, giving me a scary look. So we drove on some more, all the way through Windsor, and here we are. Had an adventure into the adventure she was going to have in a few days' time. The gov is very particular about cars. Things have to be just right, and if a car is not as the gov thinks it should be, it gets attention immediately. 3, or was it 4? Days after Ms. Gu went on her trip to Detroit, the gov came in and said, I'm not satisfied with the car steering. There seems to be a tight bearing. Ma said, take it up the road to that service station. It will be quicker than going all the way to Windsor. Gov went off. Soon after, I thought I heard the sound of the police siren, but passed over the vague idea to the house as the car drove off. Done already? No, said the gov. I came back in a taxi. Our car will not be ready until this afternoon. It needs new steering ends. But it will be all right when those are replaced. Happened? Those the gov's expressions well. I was doing about 25 miles an hour up the road, replied the gov, when a police siren went off just behind me. Pulled up directly in front of me. I stopped, of course, and a policeman got out of his car and came lumbering towards me. I wondered what I had done wrong. I had been driving 5 miles under the limit. You lobsang ramper, man asked. Read one of your books, said the man. Anyhow, said the gov, he owned it to talk and he told me that press reporters were still trying to trace us. And got something better to do, said Ma. Press, they have told lies enough about us. What time is it? 3:30, replied Ma. We'll go and see if the car is ready. It is. I will come back and collect you and Miss Gu, and we will go out and try it. Shall I telephone them? If they will deliver the car, if it is ready, you can drive the mechanic back to the garage and then come for us. I'll phone now, said Ma, hurrying off to the foot of the stairs where we kept the telephone. Goody, I'm going out, thief. Is there anything you want? You will have a pleasant trip. Ma came hurrying back. The mechanic is on his way now, she said. You get on your coat, he should be here. A thick overcoat, like other people, he just wore something light in order to keep the snow off. It often made me smile when the gov was out in just trousers and jacket while everyone else was SWA-dilled with everything they could cram on. At the door, called Buttercup from upstairs where she was entertaining Monkey Rouse, replied the gov as he went out to where the mechanic was waiting in the big green Monarch car, the blue Willane one with the red and white edging. The car was heated, but the path to the car was not. I'll think of you. Stick in the mud. The highway you will be listening to the shrieks of Monkey Rouse. Come, said Ma. Goodbye, Miss Gu, I called. Look after yourself. The doors shut, the car drove off, and I sat down to wait. Often my ears, as one gets older, particularly after a very hard life, one's hearing becomes less acute. Healthy, an alert and with a brilliant intellect. I was just an old woman cat who had had too many kittens, too many hardships. They are a long time, thief. Coming down the stairs after settling Monkey Rouse. They are indeed, eat herself with food. As far as I remember now, it was something to do with fruit and vegetables, for Buttercup was very fond of fruit. Personally, I disliked fruit intensely, except for coarse grass. Now and then, the white ones, she liked to have them skinned and then she would sit and suck them. Enough, she, Miss Gu, also liked roast chestnuts. Knew a cat, in France, who ate prunes and dates. Switched on the lights. It is getting late, thief. I wonder what is keeping them? Traffic was roaring along the road as people from Windsor returned home after their day in the shop or office or factory. Raced in the opposite direction as people on pleasure bent. They would be broke after. Not the one I wanted to see. Long after the last homing bird had shaken the snow from her night perch and tucked her head beneath her wing in sleep, there came at last the slam of a car door. Breathlessly, come under the bed, thief, I must tell you. Together we turned and went into the gov's bedroom, and under the bed where we had our conferences, Miss Goose settled herself and folded her arms. It was like this, said Miss Cougott in the car, and I said to the gov, let's ring this thing out. I said, let's see how it goes.